Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
When you name your DJ, that's two less bars you have to write. Yeah.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sitaro. This is episode 115, a talk with Mark, the 45 King, James. The 45 King has produced some of the most popular rap songs of the past few decades for artists like Jay-Z and Eminem. But before that, he took his keen ear for a funky loop and put it into the creation of beats for one of Golden Age Rap's greatest crews, the Flavor Unit. He served as beatmaker and tour DJ for the unit's breakout star, Queen Latifah, producing and mixing the vast majority of her gold debut album, 1989's All Hail the Queen. His work with other Flavor Unit members like Latee, Apache, and Lakem Shabazz, his own instrumentals like the classic The 900 Number, as well as songs outside his crew with acts like Gangstar, Eric B. and Rakim, and even Madonna, cemented his reputation as one of rap's hottest producers. After a few years out of the public eye, for reasons we discuss in our conversation, the 45 King returned with a sparse, Annie sampling beat that Jay-Z turned into his career-making hit, Hard Knock Life Ghetto Anthem. Shortly afterwards, he turned an obscure Dido song into one of Eminem's biggest hits with Stan. We caught up with the 45 King at his home in New Jersey, famous subway turnstile still intact, to discuss his storied career. If you like The Cipher, make sure to subscribe to the show in your podcast app of choice. That way you'll get each new episode as soon as it comes out. You can also explore our back catalog, including episodes like number 34 with the great A&R man Dante Ross, who talks about meeting the 45 King back in the days of the Latin Quarter. As always, you can check our website, thecyphershow.com, for more information, including playlists, for this or any other episode. And now, the man who put flavor in the Flavor Unit, DJ Mark, the 45 King. You're very early days, before you, you know, we're here in New Jersey, obviously, but you grew up in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just had Benji Melendez on the show, who was in the Ghetto Brothers, was the head of the Ghetto Brothers. Mm-hmm. And that just got me thinking about you growing up in the Bronx in the, you know, in the 60s and the early 70s.
Well, in a way, I lived in the Bronx, then I moved to Queens, Hollis Avenue, and then my mother and father got divorced in the 70s. And then we went back to the Bronx, and then my mother got a job in New Jersey, and I ended up in New Jersey.
Right.
And then I really didn't want to stay in New Jersey, so I went back to Queens on Hollis Avenue. So
That's
how I went back and forth.
But your earliest stuff, music-wise, was hooking up with Breakout.
DJ Breakout Williams was a DJ for the pioneering early rap group The Funky Four Plus One More, best known for their 1981 hit, That's the Joint. His famous sound system, featuring speakers made out of 55-gallon steel drums, was called the Mighty Mighty Sasquatch. As a teen, 45 King served as Breakout's record boy, locating and passing records to the DJ as needed.
Right, I guess you could say, yeah, yes.
Do you have any good memories or stories from your time with Breakout and the... Their sound system, which of course is famous, the
right.
Mighty Mighty Sasquatch.
The Mighty Mighty Sasquatch. Yeah, I used to carry that Mighty Mighty up the Mighty Mighty steps.
So maybe some back problems, if not some stories.
No, not back problems, but you know, it was cool though. I learned a lot of stuff from Breakout. I actually stole his swag.
How do you mean?
Well, he's the original B-boy, and I kind of adapted that from being in that location, I guess.
Mm.
Used to break dance, all the rest of that.
Wow. So you were a B-boy around the time you started to DJ?
I was actually battling people dancing, but I guess a B-boy is somebody that liked that style of music and bouncing their head to it and all the rest of that. So, yeah, I guess I was a B-boy, I guess. Break beats and all of that.
And you did actually your first song for the Jazzy Four.
Hello, my mellow, my name's Mercury. Transmitted to you from the third galaxy. I said, hey, young lady, they come on over here. And let me whisper something in your ear. How about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees? And how I rock.
The first song you're credited on.
Wow,
right?
You know
MC
about
Rock?
That?
Yeah, I know about that.
How you know about that?
I was looking around.
Wow.
So that song, what? How was that recorded?
Okay. Well, you know how everybody had their own MCs. They're all four MCs. Yo, you got to have four, you know. You're not rocking galore unless you have four, you know. Anyway, everybody had four MCs. So our crew, we had four MCs. And my father's girlfriend at the time, she used to sing for Aquarium Dream by Norman Connors. There's a group. They have a breakbeat out, too. They have a breakbeat on one of their albums, on that album. Anyway, she was one of the singers for that album, and lead singer. And she knew how to make records, so she took us to the studio and made up a track, and they rapped to it, and blah 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 blah. And we made that record, MC Rock.
Wow! And you were DJ?
I was basically just the DJ. Mm-hmm. And I remember her saying, "You can't bring turntables up in here," and blah, 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 blah. And I remember there was a certain part of the music I wanted to take out. You know, take out the bass line right here. And they took out the bass line out there, and it started rocking. Oh, no, you can't do stuff like that. And, you know, it was the engineer with his visions and her with her visions. And, you know, so, you know, like a breakdown. You know when they take the bass line out and
yeah,
it starts
yeah,
rocking.
Yeah.
No, you can't do that type of stuff. And I said, okay.
So did you think of those kind of decisions back then as like, oh, I'm thinking like a producer? Or was that just like so closely associated
with DJing? No, I was thinking like a DJ. And she was thinking like, I'm paying for this and it's going this way. And, you know, and when I was able to make my own decisions and make my own records, it went my way.
Yeah.
So basically, you got to do who I was paying for. You got to do it their way, basically.
So you mentioned that, you know, you were back and forth between, you know, Bronx and Queens and Jersey. And when you got to Jersey, you were kind of one of the first people who knew about the scene in the Bronx, you know, what we now think of as
yeah,
the
basically. When I, you know, I was the first one with the Gazelles and the first one with Britted Walkers and
right. That's what I wanted to ask about is like, I knew that you were the first person, you know, rocking a lot of like hip hop fashions and maybe.
Well, not. I was a heavy set dude, but I'm saying to Jersey, I was early.
Yeah.
But back in the Bronx, they was doing that a long time. So I caught on late for a person from the Bronx, but I caught on early for a person from Jersey. That's.
Did people in Jersey kind of look at you like you were nuts when you walked around with that stuff on?
No, they've seen it before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've seen it before. Just that I had it in. They didn't choose to have it.
When you were first getting on with the Flavor Unit and things like that, we had when I talked to Dante Ross, he told me a great story about meeting you. He said that he was at
Dante tells a story that doesn't sound right, but it's close enough, so I didn't really say anything. Yeah, you know, yeah, he tells a story. I read, but this is some time ago.
Yeah,
he said something that you know, this went this way, this went that way, this. So you kind of close, so I'll leave it alone, and who cares, basically, but...
So what is, I can tell you what he said, but why don't
okay,
you tell
well,
me...
Okay, you tell me what he said first.
He just said you approached him at the Latin Quarter.
I worked with the original Flavor Unit,
right.
So that was like 45 King, of course, and I met him because he came up to me in Latin Quarters, and he put a Walkman on me. He said, yo, who are... He said, yo, you're Dante Ross? And I said, yeah, I don't know how he knew who I was. There was no internet back then.
No pictures.
He gave me headphones, and he had like real studio headphones on his Walkman. And he played me a bunch of crazy music. And I was like, this guy's a genius. He called me on Monday with Fat Five Freddy. He started playing me music over the phone. One of the things they played me was Latifah. I told him to come meet me. He came 2 days later. And he came with Apache, Latifah, Lakim Shabazz, 45 King.
And he said he was amazed you knew who he was. And you played him beats on your Walkman.
Okay, that sounds close to being right. I don't remember what happened, and that sounds close to being right, so I guess that's basically... Yeah, Dante was the first person, he signed Latifah, basically.
Right.
Right, he said, he was working for Def Jam when I met him, and he said, Mark, I like the way this cuss got flavor sound.
The brother pull a back in your dad's a waiver. Hands
Superman is kicking the flavor.
I remember him telling me that. I also remember he bought me my first sampler before we got signed. So I knew we were signed because he gave us a sampler. So if we get signed or if we don't, I don't care. I have the sampler, you know, good. So I remember him bringing the sampler over. So yeah, I owe him a lot. Me and him is cool.
Yeah. So one of the super interesting things about your career is you were doing, I don't really know a word for it other than like instrumental hip hop, maybe like break records or whatever, from like the mid-1980s and putting them out. The 87, right, was the first one?
Oh, okay, you talk about back then. Okay, yeah. You talk about before the production work.
Yeah, before the production work. Right. You were doing these like the break records and things like that. Just Beats, was that the first one?
Well, you know what? Actually, Just Beats, I wanted to put together something with rappers on it. And I remember I had Apache and Taheed, and they had a routine. But they couldn't finish the routine. It was like after the routine was done, we just stop. And I said, you know, that's not going to work. You're going to have to stop it somehow. So it never got done. So I ended up putting out records with no rappers on it.
Wow. So that was accidental.
Right. Basically, right.
And on that record, specifically on Just Beats, there are a couple of tunes that are close to like club music, basically house or what right, I think right. You call New Jersey club music.
Right. It's funny. I'm kind of glad I moved to Jersey because I moved from the Bronx and... When I moved from the Bronx, my cutting abilities and scratching and, you know, I lost that. That got lost in the mix. But I learned how to blend two records together good. So I kind of learned, there was this guy named Quest and Naeem. And they got me into club music. And that's how the good Lord worked. Mesopotamia.
I am no student of ancient culture.
And all the Colonel Abrams stuff. Zanzibar type music.
The Zanzibar referred to here is Newark's Club Zanzibar, located in the Lincoln Motel on the Jersey side of the Lincoln Tunnel, which has been referred to as a powerful vortex in the disco universe.
So I learned how come boots, 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 boots. Now I understand how people, you know, groove off of that.
Right.
A lot of people from the Bronx, you know, it's just the same thing going on, you know. So I understand club music a lot more from moving to Jersey.
But your spin on that
was more like a hip-hop.
Hip-hop had what we now think of as hip-hop drums, right? Funk drums on it. How did you come up with that combination of like the like repetition and like kind of the melodies of club music with hip-hop drums?
Well, I'm older and I sample from records to make club records. Most people that make club records usually use whatever is in the machine. Mm. Yeah, and I'll loop an old club record from 76, because that's when it went from funk to club. So I get a record from 76 and loop of the boost, this boost, this boost. And a lot of village people had a lot of drums in it. Just speed it up, do whatever. All you have to do is take a half a bar. Boof, just boof. Yeah, two beats. And just looping over and over and over again. And then you just stole their sample. You just stole their drum track.
And
at least two beats of it.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask specifically about Master of the Game, which was a little bit after that. That you can't be tender. What he does, it has to bring the fame. The 45 Kings, the master of the game. Who is the man? And not even about the content of it, but, you know, the guy who does our website, Paul, is a huge fan of yours. And he got into collecting rare funk records. And I know he's far from the only person because of the cover of that album. You know, trying to track down all of the records that are on that cover. Was that the goal of having that record? Were you aware that people were going to try to do that?
Actually, out of all of the Tough City covers, that was basically the only one I really liked. Because, as you can see, I have kind of an artful eye, maybe, you might think. But they didn't let me do my own artwork. Mm-hmm. I told him not to use my logo, and he figured out a way to slip that in. I didn't notice that at first. And, yeah, Tough City doesn't own my logo, but for some reason he used it. He used it like, I gave that to him one time when he was in the hospital. Well, yeah. My artist came up with, no, you didn't. That's, you know, that's my thing. And since, you know, you could do whatever you want with the album cover, but just leave my logo out of it, will you? You know?
Yeah.
At least ask me.
So you signed a pretty long-term contract with them pretty early on, right?
No, not really. No, I signed with Tough City. I'm not mad at Tough City. I signed up with Tough City for 6 months, and that went by real fast, and I signed up with him for another 6 months, and that went by real fast. And then by that time, Benny Medina gave me a deal by then, I believe. Mm. But I still work with Tough City, so I'm not going to say, oh, they did anything bad to me, but...
So... I read somewhere, I haven't actually heard this, so maybe it you know, is just one of these things the internet made up, but a project of yours, the first one that I could find any documentation of was something from 84, Funky Beats 84.
Right.
So I read somewhere that one of the tracks on it contained the drums that you would later use on Ladies First. Is that true?
No, that's wrong.
That's wrong? Okay.
Mm.
What was on that record?
Actually, that was a 45. I have it hung up somewhere. That was just a plain 45 my father put out, not knowing what he was paying for, just because I wanted it, you know. So.
Wow.
Right. Wasn't that nice?
That is nice.
I'll take your word for it. You got something here, I guess. I don't know. Who would I pay, you know? That's how that happened.
That's great. So one of your, you know, an early thing you did that is one of my absolute favorites is the album, Lakem Chabazz's first album, Pure Righteousness. We're not the two to rip with, get this, see I bear witness. Me and the king is gonna kick this one out, you got done out. Nowadays you be hoping and scheming and dreaming that I might run out of rhymes.
Yeah, you know what's funny though? People send me covers, like I really want to see them. It's like some, you know, like you want to see your old girlfriend's pictures? You know, you might not, you know, so, yeah. You know, people, oh, he's going to see this old album cover. I'm going to send it to him. Okay. You like the album cover? Beautiful. You don't have to send it to me. You can send it to anybody else in the world. Don't you like this album cover? Don't send it to me.
Right.
Try that.
Yeah.
But
the
God,
the Lakem Chabazz record.
Yeah.
One of the things about it that stands out to me is lyrically, he's a pretty serious dude, right? Very into 5% stuff. But the music is so fun. See, I'm an art to a living. So take heed to the knowledge that I'm giving. And you will be uprisen upon your highest point of achievement. You will receive this loud and clear. And I mean, this is a warning or precaution. Proceed with caution. I'm so manipulant, I'll use distortion and twist out the normal shape or natural. I'm writing exact, my facts are actual. I'll make it free. Was that intentional? Was he like... something you were thinking about, like, oh, I have to kind of counter
about,
the seriousness of the
I
lyrics?
I was really thinking about making the music fun. I'm fucking with you. Nah. You know, just loop a beat, get a rapper to rap to it, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's, you know.
Speaking of rapping, you rapped a little bit yourself here and there on some records.
Let's start the show off, sisters, and go look alive. The Queen Latifah, the King of 45, bringing a mixture, a pure flavor. I make beats, she write rhymes, so I gave her a sample sound. Then she added a compound word. This is for those who haven't heard of King and Queen. Combine minds to trample those who oppose us. Here's example.
It's fun. It just take me a long time to learn my, if somebody writes something for me, it takes forever, so.
Is that why you didn't do it more?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. It takes forever for me to learn around. I don't know how they do it. I wish if I wrote, I probably would do a record or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't write, so.
And obviously, you know, of your early songs, probably the biggest one, obviously, was the 900 number. So how did that come about? When you heard that intro, you were just like, this is great. Did it jump out at you when you first heard it?
No, not really. I slowed it down a lot. It was actually real, real fast. And I slowed it down maybe 10 beats per minute. And I put a drum track under it, and I left it like it was.
Were you surprised that that seemed to, you know, that that took off so much?
No, it was kind of cool. That's when James Brown stuff was kind of hot.
That's an interesting point, because on, you know, at least the initial era of stuff, you're using a lot of the same types of samples as other producers, stuff from the James Brown canon, like the Marvel Whitney record he used and things like that.
Yeah, me and anybody else.
Yeah, but somehow you did different stuff with it, and I was just wondering how that was.
I didn't do anything different. I looped the shit and put it out, basically. But if you want to make something out of it, you know. Yeah, basically, that's all I did.
Yeah.
I may have got lucky and sampled things before people got around to doing it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously I couldn't let an opportunity to talk to you go by and not ask about Queen Latifah, right? So you actually knew her mother before you knew her, right?
Yes.
How did you first meet her?
I think her mother was in charge of picking the DJs for Irvington High, I believe. Don't quote me on it, but she hired me to do a party. And that's how I met her mother. But I met Latifah. She used to hang out with a friend of mine and bumped into her like that.
Mm-hmm. And that whole first record, the All Hail the Queen, it really, you know, listening to it, you get the idea that you two had a really strong relationship. She shouts you out on pretty much every tune.
So I put my rhyme to a DJ Morphe. Ample samples. This, for example, I made by the 45 King. So cancel your plans up. DJ, producer, and mind you, a friend of mine. I pop, tip, and spin with the children. So get down with the sound if you're willing. Now it's time to run through it. 45 King,
yeah, baby.
Do it. Yeah, there you go. I told you could do it. Now, did you enjoy it? I'm down. The 45 King is arising, surprising, hypnotizing. Star, he's up to par. So I hope you prepared yourself for what you're in for. This is Latifah's Law.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're... When you name a DJ, that's two less bars you have to write. What? Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
You know it's true. Sometimes she said my name twice. Let me thank him again. No, I'm playing. That's how it goes. You thank the DJ, right?
Yeah. So you were her tour DJ, at least initially on the, you know, initial run of like live stuff, TV appearances.
Get ready to roll in the Queen Latifah. She got a little something extra special for y'all on a surprise tip. Let's check out right about now. Do it, Queen.
Latifah is big and ready. I'm cooling out with DJ Mark and Fat Five Freddy.
Aye,
and also this show is called the OMTV.
Bye, bye,
so
bye.
Watch me boss it up for you right fast now.
Do it, Dada.
It's the law. The T-I-F-A-H, voila. See my rhyme, Mark creates the direct context sound of the dope noise. The bass will pound, I hope girls, I hope boys understand what I'm quoting. I'm not joking, I'm not freaking. This is a queen speaking.
Yeah, I was lucky. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, what was that like to see that initial rush of her kind of blowing up firsthand?
It was cool. That's why I cry when I see people blow up on American Idol, because I know that, wow, this whole shit is going to change their fucking life.
Because you saw it do it for her.
Right. And other people, Big Daddy Kane, Tretch, Jay-Z, a lot of people been in my house, all them people that been in my house. I see Busta Rhymes, Tupac, who's that guy? From New Blocks, New Kids on the Block. He been in my house.
Speaking of New Kids on the Block, you did a remix.
Right, I did two songs for them, for like $25,000, and they didn't use them.
Nice work if you can get it. Do you have them anywhere still?
No, I don't.
Oh.
No.
You bet. Getting back to Latifah for a second, that first record, kind of the breakout song on it was Ladies First, was the duet with Moni Love.
Stepping, strutting, moving on. And not forgetting, we are the ones to give birth to the new generation of prophets, because it's late. I break into a lyrical freestyle. Grab the mic, look at the crowd and see smiles, because they see a woman standing up on her own two. Sloppy slouching is something I won't do.
That kind of became an iconic hit.
By the time that video came out, Latifah was large.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the recording of that song? Anything in particular?
I remember Moni's verse was longer than Latifah. So Monica wanted her to go back in there, do some more vocals, because she got too many more than you do. She had to lay for the remix. She did extra vocals.
And you mentioned Kane a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had Kane on the show, he said...
Oh, did he mention me? I'm playing.
He said, you know, no qualification. He said, you produced Set It Off.
Set It Off. Set It Off was actually done by Mark 45 King.
Kill you like Skippy and Jip. Feel my blood fist on my death kiss. The rap soloist, you don't want none of this. Supreme in this era, I reign with terror. When I grab the mic, believe you're gonna hear her.
And I've heard a bunch of different stories about that. I just wanted to get sort of the definitive.
Okay, now
answer.
Which one do you want to believe? Go, you tell me one.
No, that's all he said. He just said you produced Set It Off.
In a way.
How do you mean?
Well, I had the drum loop and another element to go with it. And basically they did the same thing with it and they added some things to it. And so in a way I did it. In a way, well, really the person that gives it to the record company basically ended up as the producer. Okay, so you may give this stuff to somebody and they give it to somebody and now that's what they produced. They had you work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they producer, I guess.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, not to put...
It's different now. Now, yeah.
Yeah. Not to put too fine a point on it, but obviously...
Well, no, that's what happened when you start out.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other songs that we would know that you did similar stuff on but didn't get credited?
You know that Beyonce record?
Which one? Oh, yeah.
You know that?
Right.
I had nothing to do with it.
Is there any other stuff from that era, kind of like late 80s, that you did that that people might know?
You know that record by YouTube? I'm playing. I had nothing to do with it. Their big hit? You know their big hit? I had nothing to do with it. Oh, no, not really, actually. No.
No?
I think we all get jerked somehow in this game.
One of the things you did do is you had a hand in...
You sure do?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. You did Check 1-2, the Diamond D song.
Check 1-2, no one to run to. I catch 22 when I began to express myself on the lyrical tip. Ayo, I'm dip and I'm smooth as Miracle Whip.
Uh-huh. But you make a face.
Yeah, because Diamond basically told me what to do. We did it at my house. Diamond gave me more credit than I think I deserve, basically. I think I may have had a record. Maybe I had the record, I think. Yeah.
Interesting.
I get more credit for that than I really deserve. Mm-hmm. It was done at my house. I think I may have had the records in the house. And Diamond has the same records. He had more records than me, so he probably had the same records. But it was done in my house, so I think I get a little more credit than I should deserve. But I'll take that. I'll take it. No, I'm playing.
And you were one of very few producers to do, other than obviously the group member, to do stuff with Gangstar at the very beginning of their career.
Well, I was, when I got Latif signed to Wild Pitch, which with help from Red Alert, which Red Alert put me on.
Right. I was going to get to that in a minute. Right. Yeah.
What's his name had a group called Gangstar. Stu had a group called Gangstar. So I imagine how it felt to go in the store, to go in the record stores in Harlem with a Gangstar, dude from Boston, right? And say, nah, I don't know about this song, I don't know. And then next week you come in with Latif, this cut's got flavor. You know, yeah, imagine that, right? It's two different songs together. Two different types of songs all together. This Cuts Got Flavor was hot at the time.
Yeah.
With Latif. And Gangstar Keith wasn't that good back then with the production. You know, he's with Primo production, hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what did you think of those guys? Well, what did you think of Premier back then?
Actually, I didn't know Premier back then. Mm-hmm. I didn't really start knowing Premier until Gangstar was off their feet and started rocking.
Mm-hmm. So you're mostly working with Guru with that,
right? But really, I did one record for them. I think one or two records for them.
Yeah, I think it was two. Yeah,
I think the record that I did for them got them on the radio.
That's why I made a new design. Yo, B, I made it just for you because I'm a genius. And I should do no wrong, I mean this. So I'm moving on.
I think performers have to move.
That's what happened. The record I did for him got him on the radio. Red Alert told me, y'all thought he was done with y'all. That's what he told me.
Wow. Those records, I think both of them, Gusto and Knowledge, they both have like two sections to them.
So I can show you how it's gotta be done. I never run or shun. I've just begun. I've got gusto. I got gusto.
They'd have like kind of two separate beats that switch off.
I forgot.
That's fair. But speaking of Red Alert, like you said, he put you on. He played a lot of your early stuff on the radio.
Thank God.
What was the connection there? How'd that start?
You remember when I made Just Beats?
Mm-hmm.
He started playing that a lot.
Do you know how that got into his hands?
Yes. A friend of mine, rest in peace, Marky Fresh, took it to him because he went to Latin Quarters every weekend. Now, I have to say, if he didn't take the record to him, more than likely I would have. I would have went to the went to the station, and then I would have probably gave. Well, I know Chuck Chillout. I grew up with Chuck Chillout. Okay, so I would have gave two to Chuck Chillout. I would have gave two to Red Alert, and then I would have gave two to Marley and two to whoever. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I would have did the whole thing. But considering that it went straight to Red Alert first, he was playing it every week. I really didn't give it to anybody else because, right. And then I gave Red Alert something else. He played it. And I gave him something else. He played it. I gave him something else. He played it. Gave him something else. He played it. Then I started giving him rappers. Apache started playing Apache. Started playing Double J. Started playing Chiwab G. So Ramsey said, "Hey, Latifah know how to rap. Won't you do a song with her?" I don't care. Bring her on. So I made a record with her, and then he didn't play it.
What was that record? The first one, you remember?
Step Lively and Step Off.
Do you have that? Is that because that was never released, right?
Exactly. And then I did remix to it. You like this one? Like the way I remix it? Nah. You can't play it to see how what happened? Nah, I can't do that. So I think Latif was mad at Red for a minute.
And she ended up all right. I think she got over it.
I think she overcame that.
Yeah.
But then and then she got on Tommy Boy, and he started playing her first record on Tommy Boy.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're kind of talking about the Lakem Shabazz record a second ago, the first one. And there's a lot of stuff in there, you know, beyond just kind of like the basic beat. There's a lot of drops and a lot of like extra tracks and things like that.
You think you're ready to try to step for this? 9 times out of 10, I leave them breathless. I got flavor, save the bull. I track those who lack with my magnetic pull. I'm fresh and not spoil. Rhymes won't bounce or coil. When I'm hot, I am bold and scold and boil. Rhymes, I pal them, then I foul them. Ignorant savages, I exile them. Black on the outside, white.
It's not just how you feel. Usually, if you have, if I had my way, people would just rhyme off a drum track.
Yeah,
with a bass line every now and then, if I had my way. But a lot of people that put out money, there should be more to that, you know?
Yeah, you call that bells and whistles. You're kind of like
dismissive of it. Bells and whistles, so, you know.
Yeah, so you would just keep stuff stripped down if it were up to you.
Yeah. Laziness? Maybe. I don't know. I just don't do what other people do. I have done what other people do. Mm-hmm. Half the stuff in my house is from the garbage. Man, I like to refurbish it. I don't do what other people do. I'm left-handed.
Yeah. As a fellow lefty, I salute you.
See?
I guess we should pound in left hands.
Yeah, we don't have to, I guess we had to.
So one of the most unusual songs you did in this kind of first kind of flavor unit like phase of your career was one not for flavor unit at all, but for X-Clan, was Heed to the Word of the Brother. It's so different. It's like much more P-Funk, obviously.
Well, basically, that's all I did was I looped something before everybody did. That's all I had. With that, I looped up something, a record, before other people looped it up. Mm-hmm. And I think I had the 12-inch of that record. So on the 12-inch, it had a part that was a little bit different than the rest.
Did you make that 4X Clan, or did they?
Yeah. I think I got $600. I was happy. I don't even think my name is on that record for doing it, is it?
I mean, somewhere down the line, it's on there.
I may be mistaken. I don't think I got more than that. But back then, that was a lot of money. I was very happy.
Sure. And a lot of your tunes use horn samples.
Right.
A lot of them.
Let's get it started. A warning, a flash, ready to bump on the East Coast. The garbage must be. Set you free, let you see the light. You don't need to watch TV tonight.
What attracts you to horn samples?
Well, at the time, I had like 5 Kool & the Gang albums. And all you really need is 3. Okay? And I had like 5.
These are the early ones.
Yeah. The Black Label.
Yeah.
Before they got too hot.
Yeah.
You get that? Good. Do you really get that joke? What am I talking about?
It's a track.
Oh, it's too hot.
Right. Okay, good. And celebrate.
I'm a straight man, but.
So, you know, at the height of your success in that period, in the kind of flavor unit period, you were doing a lot of remixes, like we were talking about stuff for New Kids on the Block, for even Madonna.
I was lucky. Yeah, I had my 15 months of fame, I guess.
What were some of your favorite remixes you did during that period?
Been Around the World and I, yeah.
The Lisa Stansfield one.
Been around the world and I can't find my baby. I don't know when, I don't know where.
Yeah.
I wish I would have saved her a cappella to that. I met her at Flavor U the office. Said, hi, how you doing? You know, I did the remix to... She looked at me like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I usually shouldn't have said it, but she did look at me like, I could care less. Yeah.
Wow. So right after that period, like that kind of hot period, that 15 months of fame, as you put it, ended pretty abruptly, and you kind of got blackballed. I've heard you describe it that way.
Oh, yeah, because I started smoking dust, acting stupid, and that shit stuck with me forever. Yeah. And I always get, well, you know, other people just did drugs and blah, 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 blah. Right, but these other people, their faces known. I was, who they tell me? Chaka Khan. With her, Natalie Cole. Nelson, who the guy that smoked a lot of weed? Willie Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people they was comparing me to. If I was those people, they wouldn't care how much... what I've done. You know what I'm saying?
But it's because it was literally the only thing they know about you. They weren't seeing you around.
Well, they were seeing me around. I was just acting stupid. But, you know, little I know that Angel does make you act stupid. So that really fucked me up. And I still have a dent in my name because of that. And I will always have a dent in my name because of that. Unless I make a movie with Kevin Hart. And then everything is forgiven.
Well, Kevin, if you're listening...
Yeah, I know Kevin listens to your show all the time.
your beats have been used, obviously, in a lot of other people's songs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite example of that? At the time a beat of yours has been used in a track by another artist?
No, that last question bummed me out, man. No, not really. Not really. Let Me Clear My Throat was nice.
Dedicated one out to everybody here in Bahama Bay in Philadelphia. Here we go now, check it out. Get rock to the rhythm of the funky vibe, so I can get busy just one more time to the beat. And you don't quit. It's that old school rap with that new school hit. Be the pipe and pick the pimp up.
That was nice. Nice routine.
Did you know that Kool was doing that routine live before it became a record?
No. But that was smart of him to do that. I would do it live.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously to kind of revamp your career, at least in terms of the public eye, you had a couple giant hits into the late 90s, early aughts.
No, that didn't fix shit. That didn't fix shit. Because I actually, it's funny though, two people told me, I don't know if they heard it from the same source, but they told me, yeah, Mark, I heard you started doing drugs when you did Hard Knock Life. So I said, oh, okay, so I guess this stuff is lingering, you know.
Right.
And I haven't smoked dust or did anything stupid since 93. So my drug rumors stuck with me for 25 years.
Wow.
Right, so I could have been doing a lot more stuff. But when you lose your credibility, and... I'm sure I lost my credibility because when I try to explain this shit to people, they don't believe me. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm living this shit. You know what I'm saying? So I think I would know what's going on better than you. Oh, no. Oh, music talk for itself and blah, blah, blah. No, it don't. You need to be hot before somebody like your art.
Yeah.
I thought I was getting work because I had good, oh, you from the Bronx. You know your stuff. No. You getting work because people are saying you have good stuff. When they stop saying I have good stuff, I stop getting work. When they start saying, oh, he's fucked up off of drugs and blah, 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 which I wasn't at the point where I couldn't do a track. I did How Do I Love Thee for Latifah when I was hired for Dust. Let's just say when I had it in my system, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, if I was a rapper, none of that shit would have.
Right, people, yeah.
So that's how it is. That's show business. And yeah. I'm kind of glad I know my friends, you know, who my friends are now. So.
And a lot of them from the music world. I know Eric B. supported you pretty much through everything, right?
Oh yeah, Eric was one of the first person that gave me some money
for the remixes of
right
from the first record.
Right.
Yeah.
Before I became a teen, I melted microphones instead of cones of ice cream, music orientated. So when hip hop was originated, fitted like pieces of puzzles, complicated. Cause I grab the mic and try to say yes, y'all. They try to take it and say that I'm too small. Cool. Cause I don't get upset. I kick a hole in the speaker, pull a plug, then I jet back to the lab.
So, you know, you mentioned Hard Knock Life in passing, but that wasn't your first connection with Jay-Z, right? You did some songs with his mentor Jazz a while
right,
before after, then.
Right. I did two songs for Jazz.
Really, is that so close to 24 times I heard that line, read the sign of the crime. My mind circulate through the inch on the night. Your brain cells in the brain swells and burst into the worst things of hell. My big you, my notebook scares you. So out of silence, I feel like the booth on head do. Then you risk a paragraph that'll make me laugh. You're mulling and groaning and foaming like you're chewing a bubble bath.
Right before I really started getting blackballed. Right before, you know, I don't know exactly what's been said, but just when people come back to you with stories, you're about to believe stuff.
So I have to ask about what's literally behind you right now, which our listeners can't see, which is a plaque for OPP.
Right.
Which is a song that I didn't associate you with. What did you
well,
do for that?
Well, you shouldn't. I didn't have nothing to do with it. I didn't even like it when it came out. And the reason why I didn't like it, I'm glad it did well for them and it's still doing well, is because they use substitution for the drums. I remember hearing that. I said, you know what? I'm really getting tired of substitution for the drums. You know, I hope it does well, yo. I remember as the McDonald's parking lot, my brother played it for me while I was online in the McDonald's parking lot. Because I know Naughty before the album came out. And he played it. You know what? And I remember hearing the substitution drums. Mm-hmm. You know, not to hate. I'm not hating. And I just remembered, because if you play a record and it has funky drummers' drums in it.
1, 2, 3, 4, get it! God. Ain't it funky?
There's certain drums that's been used so many times that you just get tired of it, me at least. And it always a hit. Usually, still.
Right. Amazing. So what did you...
Nothing. I just know them. I don't do a damn thing. You can get plaque. You could get one. Be nice.
Right, if someone buys you one or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, you know, they don't have to... Somebody in the record company just have to like you.
Mm.
You'll put what's his name on the thing, get in his address and send it to him. Okay. Record companies have millions of dollars. They can send you a record.
Mm.
If they want to.
Right. So I did want to ask a little bit about Hard Knock Life. You know, you've talked about it a lot, obviously, and how you came up with the idea and so forth.
I talked a lot about it because a lot of people ask me about it, but it's not like I talked to you a lot about it.
Sure, but well, specifically, you said you did two songs with Jazz.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was right before I got blackballed. Jazz was nice enough to give me two songs, and I had fun working with Jazz. He's funny. We had a lot of fun. And he said, yeah, I heard you was doing some type of drugs. But I said to myself, I said, as long as he don't do the shit in front of me, I don't care. I said, oh, okay. But I think at that time I stopped. And then I started again because I wasn't getting any work. I got depressed. But anyway, I did two songs. They came out on, EMI or something like that.
That sounds right, I think.
Right, he was on a label, whatever, and it was nice enough to pay me some nice money, and that was about the last time I really got any decent money for work after that. Mm-hmm. Besides Hard Knock Life.
Sure. Was Jay around when you were doing those jazz songs?
Right, yeah. He was around. He did his vocals. He did the vocals in a phone booth right there. They both did the vocals in a phone booth. I had a microphone. I had a 414, and they both did the vocals in there. Latifah did her first album on a 414.
Did Jay remember years later? Probably not that long after, 4 or 5 years later. When
I think you usually remember when you
Knock Life.
I think you usually remember when you do rhymes in a phone booth.
That's a good point.
Right, so he probably remembered the phone booth thing, but yeah, because I think he said something that was wrong. He said, "Yeah, I went to 45 King's house to do it."
I'm almost sure, you know, maybe that we recorded it in his house in Manhattan somewhere.
The only thing I really remember about the studio that we was in, it was in New York somewhere.
You did those vocals in the city.
He did come to my house, but I think he said something wrong. I said, "Oh, Jay got that part wrong," but close enough.
Right, but you did the vocals for Hard Knock Life in the city.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I tracked the music at my house, and
well, what was amusing about that is you said like, you didn't want the engineer to fuck up your drums, so you put all the drums, you mixed the drums down yourself before he did the vocals, right?
Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Jiggle. Uh-huh. Bounce. Uh-huh. Yeah. Let it bump, though.
It's the hard knock life for us. It's the hard knock life for us. Steady three decks, we get
kicked. Steady kisses, we get kicked. It's the hard knock life. From standing on the corners bopping to driving some of the hottest cars New York has ever seen. For dropping some of the hottest...
The way I have my system set up, that the drums are basically kind of mix when I do them. I have my hi-hats and certain, you know. Yeah. So when I tracked it, you know, I just put all the hi-hat, the kicks, and the snare all on one track. So this way an engineer can't, well, you know, I like the hi-hat real loud. And I like the snare popping in. There's a lot of dirt on that snare. Let me clean it up. I don't want none of that shit, you know. Mm-hmm. They clean it up for their kids to like it. And then, you know, and then the black kids don't like it, you know.
Interesting. And so that was an issue that engineers would mess up what you thought were
well, not because
sort of
usually
drums.
I knew that at that time I knew, Mark, you're not hot, so they're going to do it without you. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they're going, "Mark, we can't do this without," you know, I wasn't Dr. Dre where we can't remix stuff, this stuff without you. You won't have to be here. They didn't give a fuck about 45 King actually being here. Mm-hmm. So I had a feeling that you better put everything on the drum, everything on one track, just in case you're not invited for the mixdown, which I wasn't. But it came out all right. You did good.
Yeah. How was that to see that song kind of blow up? You know, yet again another giant hit.
Well, yeah, that was good. I wish my mother was living to see it, but she wasn't living to see that. And
did that?
It was good.
Did that change anything for you?
Yeah, it was an ego, good for the ego. Actually, no, you would think that anybody else that would have did that track would have got a lot more work, but not me. So, you know, that's, you know, I think I got one jar. I think I got Stan after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you would figure I would get more than Stan. I think I did a Rakim track. But basically, that was it. Basically, the only person that put out, well, with me, I never had a record that somebody promoted and put it out and shot the video and it did bad. Never had one of them. It's always, you know, they talk shit about Mark. I don't know if I can trust them. And what can you do? You know what I'm saying? What can you do?
Yeah.
Because they go by, if my kids like it, I might like it. You know, and what do your kids know? You know, a lot of people do that, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Cody. Cody, come listen to this and tell Daddy if you like it. Oh, Dad.
sad but true. How did you first get the idea to loop up the Dido bit for the beat that would become Stan?
My tea's gone cold. I'm wondering why I got out of bed at all. The morning rain clouds up my window. I can't see it all. Be mine if I could.
Cody told me. Cody. Cody hooked me
Cody
up.
Cody is really fucking with Dino hard. Yeah.
Cody know what he's doing. Okay, yeah. My tea's gone cold. I'm wondering why. Right, that right.
Yeah.
I like the way it, what's the name singing? Got out of bed at all.
The morning rain drops up my window, but I can't see it all. And even if I could, it would all be great. But your picture on my wall, it reminds me that it's not so bad, not so bad.
Just then,
That's Elton John. I put that all in there. I gave it up at the end for the front. That's funny. Yeah, that was cool seeing. I actually went to the Grammys and seen him do that.
Wow.
Yeah. I talked to M on the phone. And I put him on hold for a minute because somebody was calling me. I hope you don't hear this and get mad. But it was the fastest hold I was. Yo, I'm talking to M, man. I'll talk to you later. Because they just had to ring like 20 times. You know, I have to talk to Mark right now. You know. Yo, I'm talking to Eminem. I'm talking to Eminem, right? And the phone keep on beeping. Dude, can I put you on hold for 1 second, man? I'm fever. He said, yeah, okay. I clicked over. Yo, I'm talking to Eminem. Yeah, I said, real quick. So, you think he'd get mad for me saying this?
No, I think he'll be
How many people get put M on hold? Right.
Probably no one now. Yeah. Right. Were you familiar with I know you knew he was a big seller, obviously, but were you familiar with his music?
I'm used to answering this question. With M, I knew he was a platinum act. I was going to do the track.
Yeah.
And then somebody else bought that track. So I had to try to get it back for somebody to give it to M. But what happened was the person that bought the track worked under Steve Stout.
At the time Stan was recorded, Steve Stout was the president of the Urban Music Division and an executive vice president at Interscope Geffen A&M Records.
And Steve said, buddy, you don't have to give this track to M because M hot right now. You know, I don't know what he said, but basically that's
but
what
it
happened.
It ended up, yeah.
Yeah, so I have to thank Anton, Foxy Brown brother.
Yeah.
Because he bought the track first for Pretty Boy. Thanks, Anton. Yeah, I love Anton. I love you too, M. M, I love you too. Okay.
What did you think when you heard, you do this beat, you loop the Dido thing, you send it off?
I got lucky. I get lucky a lot. I'm lucky.
What did you think when you heard the finished version? It's like 7 minute long song.
I said, wow, that's just long.
Drums. Yeah.
That's just long, right? I didn't know what the scratching on.
The sound of the pencil on the paper.
I wrote you, but you still ain't calling. I left my cell, my pager, and my home phone at the bottom.
I didn't know what's it. Well, he's the boss, whatever he wants. I can't say nothing to him. It's nothing about it. I didn't understand what that was.
Amazing.
I just hope he's not mad because I told him about the whole thing. It's a good story. It's the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know what the good thing is about it? Working with doing that song, I can lie about a whole bunch of shit and people believe me. Yeah, I can lie. Jay a pain in the ass, really. They believe me because I did the song.
Mm-hmm.
And M never shut up, man. He just keep on talking. People stupid. People, because they know, they don't want to hang out with me, but they'll listen to me for a quick second. Mm-hmm. And if I can tell the right lie, I can come off with some shit, Nah, but actually, I'm proud of myself that I never really lied about anything to get a dollar from this artwork I'm doing.
Yeah.
I never said, I never lied about anything. Nothing, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that,
Yeah.
Now, I have to lie. I have to tell people I like their music sometimes.
Because
they have some crappy-ass music, and you don't want to hurt their feelings. And some people can't take the truth.
Yeah.
A lot of people can.
So one of the things people say about you as a producer that you have a very, distinctive sense of rhythm, of swing. Is that something you think is true about yourself?
I'm a B-boy from the Bronx. I don't know. But my mother played the piano and my father was into music. So I can't answer that.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky, I guess.
Yeah. And just a super almost obscure question for a second. The stuff you did with King's Son was really, really awesome. And I had questions specifically about Fat Tape. Did you mix that song?
Fat Tape. Do you remember? I think that must have been the only record that I did for him. Wow.
There's like, yeah.
I remember, like, okay, King's Son story. I remember going to a studio, and they had a Fairlight. Stevie Wonder used to play on the sampler, like the first sampler probably.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, that's cool. And I remember I was dead tired. And then he started to rap, and I woke up because he was that good. He started rhyming. He said, wow. He was nice with his. The track that he had, I gave it to La T. I gave the bass line to La T, and La T got mad, and he wasn't talking to me for like 6 months. And while he wasn't talking, we friends now. We cool. That's scarce. He forgave me. I shouldn't have gave his bass line away. I just figured that I could give him another one, and it'd be cool. But that wasn't the case. And anyway, when I got him the record deal, he wasn't talking to me. So we went down to Stu Fine office together, but he wasn't saying too much to me.
Wow, that sounds like uncomfortable.
That was a little awkward.
Yeah.
We got through it. And then a little after that, he forgave me a little bit after that.
Right. But the
Is that true? Yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah.
So I asked about that song specifically because on that song, I don't know if you even remember, but the hi-hats are panned hard left in a way that I don't remember hearing in any of your other songs.
Yeah, back then, I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. Yeah. You know, because, back then, back in the 70s, they used to pan the drums and all types of shit. And then somebody told me that you really shouldn't pan the drums because you make the waves and the records bug out. That's what, he didn't say bug out, but he said, you know. I said, oh, yeah, really? I said, okay. So I had the drums in the middle of the...
Well, I guess that explains why you never did it again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it true? I heard you say once how you've been using like more or less the same bass sound.
Well, you know, this is like you took all of my interviews and picked out certain shit you want to. This is cool. This is cool. I like this. Go ahead. Say that again. I'm sorry.
Oh, just that like you've been used the same bass sound on most of your records. That it's literally a sample from a bass guitar and then
right.
Where
you get that from?
Keyboard.
Yeah.
I don't remember the source. It's somewhere.
You tap my phones.
About. First of all, what kind of bass guitar was it? Do you remember?
I remember I bought the bass guitar from probably a used bass guitar for $90.
Wow. And that's been the
man, I had it,
King
I had, right,
bass
I had
sound.
It hanging right. I had it hanging on the wall. And I plucked it one time, I sampled it, and I turned it into a C. And then I sampled with it and I filtered it. And I've been using it ever since. Sounds different on every record it touches. Yeah. I don't like plug bass. Like Steinfeld. Bong, 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 bong. You know what I'm talking about? The stuff?
Yeah, the slap bass stuff, yeah.
Oh, I hate plug bass.
Yeah.
I remember I did a remix for somebody, and I guess the person was cutting the check. He had somebody put a plug bass over my shit. Ain't that something? It was the Fame shit for Dave Bowie.
Oh, right. You did the Fame 90 for him. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a 90. I remember. Yeah, that's when I was hot.
What was that? What was that experience? You just got the original and they said, you know.
Yeah,
have fun.
I think I sampled them. I saved the Fame, 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 Fame. I sampled that somewhere. I probably threw it away by now. But I used to have the acapella of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So
that is, right?
Yeah. So
a Beatle was played on that on one of those tracks.
John Lennon co-wrote, played guitar, and sang on David Bowie's original version of Fame, including singing the outro vocals Mark is talking about here. He even gave the song its title.
But I know I sampled it. Bang, 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 yeah. Bang. Yeah. That was cool, eh?
Yeah. So one of the things about when you grew up, if I can out you, you were born in 61, right?
Yeah, I'm old, yeah. Dude. I'm 53 years old.
Yeah. One of the things people forget, I think, about the early 60s, because it so quickly
became the
rock and roll era, is that no one was really buying albums in the early 60s. The only albums that were really popular were musicals.
Yeah, actually, I don't remember American Bandstand like that. I remember like Soul Train.
Yeah.
So I basically remember stuff from, right, I don't go back that far, but yeah. Right.
Well, the reason I bring it up, and this is, you know, when you were very, you know, very young, even like 2 and 3 years old, you know, maybe heard around the house or whatever, the musicals.
I didn't hear American Bandstand. What did I hear? I guess jazz type stuff from my father, I guess.
Well, you know, obviously you sampled Annie as one of your big hits.
Well, that's a...
Right, that came out later, but like... You have this one song that you put out where you sample Paul Revere from Guys and Dolls.
I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather is clear. I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather is clear. Can do. This guy says the horse can do.
And you did kind of a fun instrumental of that.
Yeah, I did do a fun instrumental.
She
said the right word.
Yeah. So can you talk about that a little bit? Do you like musicals?
Well,
are you a fan of musicals? Like,
actually,
where did that come
from? You're right about that. I'm that age where I would watch Guys and Dolls, where most producers that do what I do wouldn't watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've seen Guys and Dolls when it came back when I was a kid, and I watched it. I must have seen it maybe 3 times, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I got the horse right here. His name was Paul Revere. You know, you can protect, you know, that's all.
Yeah.
Can do.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, you have a thing for cartoons as well. I know you've sampled the Archies before.
Yeah. How did you know? You know it's the Archies because I told you, probably.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't recognize it. Yeah.
Good. Don't tell them. Betty, you'll have a fit. No, I'm
Veronica will be cool, but Betty, she'll call
Betty don't mind me sampling. You know what I'm saying? Veronica, which one? Veronica don't mind me sampling because she samples. Well, I ain't going to say it.
Yeah. So lately, you've been doing, actually, we're sitting at the table where you do your Making the Beat show, where you have some of your old friends, people like Premier, Kid Capri, Diamond D, kind of come through for informal conversations.
It's really a bullshit show. I really try to promote my music in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, we're just people talking shit, whatever. It's not really meant to me. It's a YouTube video. Please, people, don't make too much of it. You know, it's not a documentary about anything, you know. So, you know, people like to make a big thing out of it. I was told that your music is much too loud and blah, blah, even the Primo thing. And he just got a real kick out of telling me stuff 4 years later. I knew about that, you know, because I like the music and I do all the editing and everything. And sometimes when you do all the editing yourself, you know what they're saying. So you don't realize that the music is too loud because you know what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And people that don't know what they're saying, oh, I can't really concentrate on it because the music is too loud. And then sometimes people talk real close to the microphone and then
and
they talk like
away.
This.
Yeah.
And they talk like that. And unless you're going to, in editing, unless you're going to really, really fix all that bullshit, it's going to be loud. And then the next record is having to be louder. So it doesn't work sometimes. And I didn't catch that. So, yeah. Some of that. Actually, I get better and better each time I do a show with everything.
So you're still doing the Making
the
Beat series?
Oh, when I get somebody, yeah, it takes a long time for rendering and it takes a lot of money to produce one of those shows. And people don't realize that. So I make sure when I get somebody to do it that they, at least larger than me, you know, have a big, you know, a big name. And maybe, you know, and they basically doing me a favor. So. Mm-hmm.
And one other, you know, going back for 1 second, one thing that I was curious about is obviously you did the Chill Rob G album, his first album, Ride the Rhythm. fantastic record. Were you caught up at all in some of the legal maneuverings around The Power and Snap, where they used his vocals?
Change your lyrics. Everybody's a critic. It's getting kind of hectic. My rhyme is authentic.
I didn't have really anything to do with it. I remember a guy that was representing, I Got the Power. I mean, the girl that sang it, Jocelyn Brown. Got mad at me for some shit. I don't know. This is a conspiracy and blah, 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 because I guess she didn't get paid for doing I Got the Power, and I ain't had nothing to do with this shit. First, it's like, okay, don't you think that that's her singing? Yeah, I think that's her singing. What you want me to say? I had nothing to do with it, you know? And then we was on Skype telephone, so you couldn't really hear. I couldn't really hear what he was saying. And then he had a British accent, and you know I can't understand you. And the Skype and a British accent, forget about it. And a dude, forget about understanding what he's talking about. Yeah. So he's mad at me, and this is a conspiracy, and blah, blah, blah. I want you to help us get some. First he's helped me, and then now I'm doing something. Anyway, so I figure, I guess he's okay if Jocelyn still trusts his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good luck for her. Good luck for her. But like I said, I really had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And I do believe that's Jocelyn Brown singing.
Because
mm-hmm. that's what he started out asking me.
Right.
Then conspiracy.
Yeah.
What the fuck you talking about?
That record, more than a lot of other stuff you did with rappers at that time, as opposed to like your instrumental stuff, it's more like there's more kind of a club music vibe on some of the chill Rob G stuff.
Discuss it. I made the record rough so you can rush it. So spin it, play it, memorize it, say it. My rhyme is law, the beat will pay it.
I'm one black man, strong will fulfill. Into your head, these things I wanna drill. I am the future shock. I'm here to rock it not. The future's here now. This ain't no powwow. So drop the pipe.
Yeah, well, okay, well, you know, actually, with the power,
yeah.
The only thing I can say I actually wrote. I wrote that. Okay, now Jazz Bascal came up with bam, 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 bam. I remember telling your Jack go and he did it. So that I wrote that part.
Mm-hmm.
So
Was there something about Rob's style that you were like, this guy would sound good over like dancier tracks?
I don't think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't really, I don't analyze it. I don't put it on a scale and swab his mouth and shit. I don't do things like that.
So what are you up to these days? Obviously, have you been making the beat show? You've been doing your Platinum Smash series of instrumentals.
I'm glad you think they are smash. I put out the 40. I put out 45s, and if you're a collector, I guess you should have them. You should want to have them if you're a 45 collector.
Is it new stuff or old or a reissue of all the stuff?
Actually, it's kind of I would say it's new because it's stuff that's looped that I don't think people have. There you go, and it's on 45, and there's supposed to be a 45 thing now. People are buying 45s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to write a script.
Right. We were talking about that off air for a second. You have, you're working on a movie script. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. It's about two girl rappers that's beefing on record. And after they finish beefing on record, and they, you know, their record deals, you know, went away and everything, and they went back to being mothers. Their kids meet up 20 years later and start beefing on records, start beefing, you know, rappers. So, you know, like, you know, the next generation, we still have beef type stuff.
You have people in mind in your head to maybe star in it?
Yes. There's a lot of battle rappers that told me already that they would be interested in doing it. And I'm writing it now.
One final thing that I have to ask about, you know, one of the more famous uses of the 900 number was as music for the Ed Lover dance on Yo MTV Raps.
That is
That's all right, though.
All right. Hey, let's slow it down for him. Ready? Get him. Slow motion, Ed Lover.
I can't handle it, baby.
Can you handle that?
Can you handle it?
Can you handle it? With that, man. Speed that up, man. Let me show him how to do
this,
man.
Oh,
man. Let's back to speed, man. Come on, Hammer. Let's get this in the hip, man.
Throw Hammer.
Throw Hammer.
Throw.
There it is, baby.
There
it
is,
baby.
But you knew Ed way before then, right?
Right. I knew Ed before Rap Records. So
before his group. Wait, I forget the name of the group, the one that was signed to Def Jam.
Ed Lover's group was called No Face.
Way before that.
Yeah.
I knew him, like, back when Good Times came out. Yeah, that's really good. I knew Ed Lover when Good Times was out. And before Rappers Delight. Right.
How did you meet him?
When I moved to Queens, he lived, I think, around 208 Street, and I lived 211 Street. And I had friends that lived on 208 Street. And I used to hang out with them, and I bumped into him. And I wanted to DJ, so I wanted to get down with some you know, crew, whatever. And I DJed for them, and they liked me. I was down for a little while, whatever.
Huh? And finally, you know, obviously you have so many songs and loops and hits and all that. What of your music is your favorite? Do you have anything over the years?
Good one. Well, I think the one that made me the most money, I would say Stan, I believe. Stan paid for my taxes. Thanks, M. Basically. Hard Knock Life. Discuss Got Flavor. If you know what that is.
Yeah, the early, maybe your first, I don't know about your first song, but the first song of yours that a lot of people
heard.
Right.
Just going on tour with Latifah was cool. Being her DJ was cool. You ready for Queen Latifah? That was fun. Especially after her second video, she was like, okay, now I'm hot. Yeah. Come on out, Moni. Yeah, Moni hot too. That video made them both hot. Yep. God bless her.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for your time. This was
like an interview, the best of all of my interviews. Pretty good, man.
Wow. Thank you.
You do your job, man.
Thank you. DJ Mark the 45 King. Did I get it right? Is that the whole title?
Well, actually, that was the whole title.
That was the whole title.
Now it's just 45 King. But people love calling me Mark 45 King, and
which is kind of getting half of each title.
It's wrong, but in the record, Latifah said Mark 45 King.
The ruler of the ring is Lord Ramsey, and music is made by Mark the 45 King.
So you know, thanks, Dana. But yeah, when people call me Mark 45 King on the record, I don't change it because for me to make that one little change might mess up that whole flow, you know? So I said, you know what? You did it good. You just got my name wrong.
Okay. Well, he's not Mark the 45 King. It's just the 45 King.
Right. No, actually, DJ Mark the 45 King was my name.
Was your name, yeah.
Kid Capri. Okay, if it was for Kid Capri, quick, there wouldn't have been any Hard Knock Life because he let Jay-Z hear Hard Knock Life. Kid said, yo, Mark, I want to play that for my parties. So I put it on a plate for him. And he played it, and Jay heard it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what was I saying?
Oh, just about your name. Did Kid have something to do with your name
okay,
in the first place?
Yeah. Cool DJ Red Alert said, yo, you should just cut off DJ Mark and just have the 45 King. okay, man, you playing my records every week. I might as well listen to you, right? Be smart.
Yeah.
Be smart. Be smart.
First off, a huge thanks to John at Redefinition Records for setting up this interview. It was a meeting I was very excited about, as you'd know if you were looking at the show's Instagram feed the night we recorded the episode, where I kept throwing up pictures of all the cool stuff in 45 King's Place. As a huge fan of his work with the Flavor Unit, especially Lakem Shabazz, I was thrilled to be able to talk to him about the whole scope of his career. He's incredibly important and influential for reasons that go far beyond Hard Knock Life and Stan. And I hope that you guys have a better idea of why after listening to the show. Another thing that struck me about 45 King was his humbleness. He's incredibly unassuming about his music and about the work he put into it. It was a real lesson for me about the importance of humility. And it was super cool to see the phone booth where Jay-Z had once recorded his vocals. Join us in 2 weeks when we talk to a true Southern rap and legal pioneer, Luther Uncle Luke Campbell. The Two Live Crew mastermind talks about the origins of Southern rap, his historic free speech battles, and his brand new memoir. And he also tells us about a record that even he found offensive. Again, if you enjoy The Cypher, make sure to subscribe on your podcast app of choice. And if that app is iTunes, leaving us a rating or a review is one of the most crucial things you can do to ensure the show's continued growth. And if you really want to see us grow, visit patreon.com/thecyphershow and make a donation. Every little bit helps us to continue creating great episodes. We even have special rewards and experiences for our donors. You can find us anywhere on social media at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this week's show, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. And don't forget to visit us online at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
They just had to ring like 20 times. You know, I have to talk to Mark right now, you know.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
I get more credit for that than I really deserve.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think I got $600. I was happy.
Special thanks to John Notarfrancesco at Redefinition Records for helping to make this episode possible.
Right, so I could have been doing a lot more stuff.
And special thanks to this month's biggest Patreon supporter, Bikram.
We was on Skype telephone, so I couldn't really hear what he was saying.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Why you look at him? I caught that. Is that a code for something?
No, it's not a code for anything.
I was going to cough. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah. Code for telling him not to cough while we're on air.